What we are witnessing is nature's great reclamation effort in our current geographical epoch. Within this territory, demarcated by a 40-foot deep, 200-meter wide man-made trench spanning hundreds of miles, the revitalization of biodiversity rivals the most diverse ecosystems of the Holocene. Uniquely driving this resurgence is one of the world's apex predators, a hunter so capable that it can hunt alone or in packs, so unrelenting that it doesn't sleep, so lethal, primitive man used to run from its numbers, abandoning it to this remote and barren wilderness known as the Dead Sector.
Zedheads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Lucy.
Lucy's back!
Yay!
This is the Walking Dead cast, episode 478.
And this episode, we're covering Tales of the Walking Dead, episode 4, Amy/Dr. Everett.
You corrected me on the fly there. I have season 4 for some reason.
Yes, time has passed. We're on season 4. Yeah,
that's what I've been gone longer than you thought. Well, welcome back. Man, we're heading down the home stretch. Like, we have 2 more weeks of this, and then before you know it, we'll be into the final 8 for The Walking Dead. How's that feel?
Absolutely bonkers. And also bonkers because, like, also the countdown to my vacation to San Francisco to come and see everyone. So, yeah, very excited, but also very, like, emotional, I think.
I know. I was just, we were just talking before we started recording. I was telling Lucy that I just sold enough tickets to make my money back for the theater. Which,
yay.
I don't know if you guys care, but that's good for me. So it's officially a success. So that's
hooray.
Really cool.
Yeah. And I only made like 10 people I know buy tickets. So, you know.
Oh, that was nice of you. They won't be there, but.
No, they won't be there. I told them there was a live stream. yeah, might have lied.
But if you guys are interested in that, the information is at podcastica.com/TWD finale party, I think. That's right. But I also want to remind you guys, if you listen to the little 15-minute episode I put out recently, that we have a contest going this week. One lucky person is going to win a Podcastica t-shirt, a Kirk Manley Walking Dead poster, of which I have several to choose from, and an unopened Here's Negan hardcover comic book with Negan's origin story. So a lot of Walking Dead related stuff there. Well, a couple things. And if you stay tuned to the end of this podcast, I'll give you details on how to enter.
Excellent. Can I enter? Can I win? Have I won?
You can.
Can I win?
Yeah.
Yay. Okay. I've won.
If, as long as people, yeah. Okay. Never mind everybody.
Everyone, the competition's off.
I don't know if people would think that was fair, actually. You can't enter.
Okay.
Sorry.
Fine. Okay. Whatever.
Okay. But anyway, you're always a winner. So let's get into this week's podcast, Tales of the Walking Dead, season 1, episode 4, Dr. Everett.
Someone crack out the ukulele for Somewhere Over the Rainbow, because Dr. Green just got mentioned.
I wanted to ask, though, before we get into this episode, you watched 1 or 2 episodes of Tales of the Walking Dead before I even got around to it, and you were like, I'm kind of liking it. So I thought it'd be fun to get your perspective on the 3 that have aired so far.
Excellent. Okay. Well, first of all, the co-hosts you've had on have been amazing. We did laugh because Peter walked into the room twice, once when I was listening to Cassie and once when I was listening to Jonathan. And he asked if you were specifically targeting co-hosts from the Commonwealth of what Great Britain used to have around the world. And I was like, maybe, I don't know. But yeah. I thought Sadie, Cassie and Jonathan were all excellent. And I really enjoyed listening to the show as a listener instead. So it was good.
You know, I did not consciously seek to get co-hosts from that aren't from my home country. Maybe it was a subconscious thing. I don't know.
It was funny. I just thought it was brilliant. And I loved listening to them discuss the episodes. And yeah, I thought you hit on all the points I had, really. But what I would say, so episode one was...
Terry Cruz,
Loves Olivia Yogurt Munn. And Olivia Munn. That was probably the one I liked the least, but I still enjoyed. I thought it was sweet. I found Olivia Munn much more watchable than I remember her being. And I enjoyed the kind of slasher twist at the end. I thought that was really, really smart. And that kind of, I think it was a good one to open with. I loved episode two with Parker Posey and Jillian Bell. I just thought that was absolutely brilliant.
Really fun.
So fun and just so wacky. I'd love to know what Karen thought of that episode if she watched it, actually, because I know Karen's a Parker Posey fan. So, Karen, if you're listening,
we're going to have to force her to watch it.
We're going to have to force her to watch
this. She always says she's
going to
watch, but never does.
I know. She's too busy watching high quality TV. Like Better Call Saul. She's so classy. That one was brilliant. The Alpha one, I had thoughts. I thought it was kind of like an Agatha Christie almost at the start, like Murder on the Nile or something. I feel like that could have been two episodes, or like there was two stories there. Like, I kind of wanted to know more about life on the steamboat, but I also liked seeing Alpha in a more sympathetic role without it being like sugary. We were sympathizing with her because she was being brutal and that was what was needed. Whereas the people around her were kind of being idiots.
And she was being treated unfairly.
Exactly. So that one I really enjoyed. And then that brings us up to today, which again I thought was pretty strong. I think what I like about this is, regardless of how I feel, I know it will be something different next week. And I was thinking it really reminds me of one of my favorite shows, The X-Files, that would have big myth arc episodes that were about like the whole mythology of the show and the bigger conspiracies, but also like amazing monster of the week episodes. And they always played with genre. There were some that were done in the style of like, I don't know, B movies, some were done like comedies, some were done like slasher fix. And I think this is like a whole set of monster of the week episodes, and I'm digging it. It's fun.
Maybe the Daryl show will actually be more like that, because one thing about X-Files is you always had Mulder and Scully.
Yes.
So Daryl will be like the Mulder, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, it's big shoes to fill. Fox, Mulder, and Dana Scully, man.
I was thinking while watching this week's episode that maybe this show would be better if they were all two-parters. Just to be able to flesh it out a little more and not cram everything in, you know?
I'm with you on that. There was a couple of things with this episode that I was like, oh, I kind of want to dig into this a bit more, and I kind of want a little bit more time. Every episode has felt like it ended quite suddenly, which I think is a good thing, because it means you're wanting more, but it can feel a bit jarring as well.
Yeah. I mean, last week's episode, I enjoyed, but then at the end, a bunch of things happened really fast and I was like, what? So I feel like that needs a sequel, but
absolutely. To address the continuity potential issue, but also because I want to fill in those gaps. I want to know how we went from meeting Hera to Hera's head in a cave and Alpha being full Alpha. Like, there's a lot you could do with that.
Right. So this week you said it was strong. Anything else to say in general about it?
Enjoyable, good performances. I had some questions, and it probably wasn't the one that captivated me the most, but I liked it well enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, on first watch, I was not a fan. I have, like, if you've listened, you know, I've been liking this show. But I thought, oh, this guy is giving me the same feeling I got when we first were introduced to Virgil on The Walking Dead.
Freaking Virgil.
Like, dude. You know, and it bothers me sometimes when someone is such a nudnik that you don't think any human would act that fucking annoying to the point of putting other people's lives in danger, you know? Very true. I still have some of those feelings about this episode, but on second watch, I think, you know, you've heard me say over and over again, I liked it better on second watch. With this one, there was a bigger gap than usual. I found a lot more to like on second watch. And I think I'm kind of skipping ahead a little bit here, but I think the main reason why was I started to think of Dr. Everett like Jane Goodall, who studied
monkey lady.
Chimpanzees. Yeah. And it made me sort of feel, because I think that's probably the seed of the idea, to be honest, of how they wrote this episode. And that made me filtering it through that made me see a lot more to chew on, so to speak.
What changed it for me, and it's kind of my, probably my first point, is there was a lot I didn't pick up on the first time I watched it, because I'm out of the game, guys. I've had 3 weeks off. I can't pick up nuance anymore. I'm just like, huh? I read somewhere that this is actually meant to be like well into the future. Like, yeah, the dead sector is like something we've yet to see even in World Beyond. The creation of that is something that happens well into the future of Rick's timeline. And one article went so far as to say this is roughly 20 years from when Rick is in his coma. I couldn't see in the text enough to validate that either way, but I know that the showrunner said there was going to be one episode set very much in the future, and this would seem to be a good fit. So when I thought about it in terms of like, okay, this is actually almost like another era, that's kind of interesting. And I also I kind of know what you mean about wanting a second episode, because there were so many like
questions that came up.
Yeah, and little references to things. So for me, my kind of number five is some of the hints of other bigger stories. So she asks him, Amy asks Dr. Everett when she first meets him, are you a mule? Like, as in someone who smuggles stuff. So what's being smuggled or muled from where to where? Like, what's happening? What's this divide between the dead sector and the outside? Like, is the outside dead free? If so, why would you go into it? Why are Amy's group there? There's also the question of, I can't remember what he calls the group, but the group who are beheading the Zeds.
Skull hunters.
I read it as Amy's group actually were skull hunters, and that was a reveal at the end.
Yeah, it wasn't clear to me. What she said was that the skull, she was part of a nice group of people that were just looking for a place to settle and wanted to resettle the dead sector, which we can talk about why she might want to do that. Mm-hmm. And that she only made friends with the skull hunters because they could help them get across that divide. And then when he found skulls at her, or heads at her camp, she said the skull hunters, the only way they would help us if we promised to get some Zed heads for them. And then, yeah, he found a whole truck full of heads. And so I thought the same thing. I thought, okay, I guess they're saying that she was lying. Otherwise, why show this? But then I thought, I mean, who cares? It doesn't mean anything. Like,
no.
Well, I guess it might change things, because if her story was that she was trying to resettle this area, but actually she was just trying to get these heads, which they said the skull hunters used as trophies, but also to like scare other people off or something like that, then that's a slight change. But I don't really understand how it significantly changes anything else that happened in the show. I mean, we're not sympathetic with him. We don't care if you take zombie heads off of zombies. They're just monsters that kill people. So it doesn't make me think, oh, she's a bad person. You know what I mean?
Exactly. It was like, I was like, oh, is this a reveal? I was like, oh, and then I was like, but why? It's not like, oh my God, she was a whisperer the whole time. I'm right, just like, no. Oh, okay. I have she no idea zombies. If that means. Yeah. I'm like, she's bad, I guess. I don't know. Like, it's better
not
that
quite
than
as
live people.
Good as we thought, or just exactly the same, but different.
Maybe it was about his faith in humans. Like, he kind of got some back and then realized that she wasn't.
Yeah,
like,
she's
I don't
a liar.
Know.
Yeah, yeah.
We also got his backstory of, you know, when he lost his team. So I read that as like, oh, he lost his team in like year one. But now I'm like, did he lose his team in like year 10? Like, is this a bigger deal than I first read it to be? So that was something that kind of stuck out for me when I rewatched it.
Yeah, he said something about he studied them for some amount of time after the shift, which I think meant after the zombie apocalypse started, although I'm not sure. And I can't remember how much time he said, but it seemed like it was maybe a few years or something.
Uh-huh. You know? So when I watched it with that kind of expansive timeline in mind, mm-hmm. his character made a bit more sense to me. I was like, okay, you would become a bit loco and a bit hardened and a bit, you know, attached to this one Zed, and maybe in a way that we won't have seen yet in the main show, because they're still a little closer and a little more tethered to reality as we mm-hmm. know it.
Yeah, it reminds me of this news story I just read. It's not really the same, but apparently there was still some really primitive tribe, I think in South America, and there was only one guy left from the tribe alive, and the government had forbade anyone from interfering on a certain amount of territory just to sort of protect his space. But there was some like footage of him through the trees, like chopping this tree down or something. And recently they found him dead in a hammock, and he had put some leaves on himself, which maybe signified that he knew he was dying or something like that.
Oh, but
it's just
goodness.
Really interesting to think of this man out of time, you know? I don't know. I just totally went off on a ramble thing. Sorry about that.
No, there's also that, Island, I can't remember the name of it. I thought it was Ascension Island, but it's not Ascension. Oh, Sentinel Island, where they keep sending like missionaries there, even though the Sentinelese people are like, we don't want you, we're literally going to kill you. They shoot arrows at you. It's like,
that's a sign.
I'm like, read the room. They're like, we don't want your gross diseases. We don't want you here. And they're like, no, we're going to go and settle them. And you're like, finding it hard to empathize here. So yeah, that was a little tangent, but interesting, I think. And yeah, the final thing I've got on my notes here, one of the things I found most fascinating about Amy was that she is, she's lost a hand. So she's working with a kind of Aaron set up with a kind of
prosthetic.
Which I think is actually, in some ways, a benefit when you're dealing with Zeds.
Lights, just, simple.
Always got your weapon with you.
Mm-hmm. You can stab a peach if you want.
Absolutely. So I kind of like that. But obviously there's a question there of like, what happened? You know, how did she end up in that situation? And where did he get, how did she get to that point?
I mean, for that one in particular, I thought it was actually kind of cool that they didn't dwell on it. They never spoke of it as far as I could remember.
And that, I agree. That was kind of cool to have it just be part of who she was.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, the answer, I think, is pretty obvious. She was bitten, somebody chopped off her hand. And this is the kind of thing that happens a lot in the ZA. So it's just like another, it's diversity, you know? Here's another one-handed person.
Also, like, how many, inverted commas, intact people would you have at the very end, you know, towards, like, everyone who's survived has survived at a cost. And it makes sense, I suppose, that you would see more and more people with kind of differently abled and different injuries and different kind of ways of mitigating that. So it's really interesting to see that. The Zeds in this show, this episode, still can't climb and seem to adhere to the dumb Zeds.
Yeah.
Which, given what we've seen in other aspects of the universe, makes me wonder, was another thing that made me wonder about the timeline a little bit.
I thought about that too, say this is further in the future and Channing Powell is like, okay, Scott Gimple, this is what I want to do. Did he like have any thoughts about that? Like, oh, I don't know.
You can't do that because that'll change this kind of thing, right? And blah, blah, blah. But those are kind of the things that the episode provokes, I think, as questions and makes you wonder. And it's kind of cool because it gives you room to imagine and think about. It's almost like inviting you to write fan fiction of like what you think happened, how to fill in those blanks. But it was also kind of crying out, I think, for a bit more world building if we'd had more time. My one department of suspension of disbelief is, did we have like drones that were that good and would last that long in 2010? Like, I'm just not
that
convinced.
I know of.
No,
I mean, maybe there were some, you know, maybe they just weren't available to the public, but I don't think they were used in filmmaking then. So I'm going to say no.
Yeah. And oh my goodness, that high def was very high death.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they fudged that a bit, I think, just to sort of try to explain why just a single guy could get such great nature footage. But I thought the same thing. I read that it was only legalized to use drones in filmmaking in 2015, I think.
There you go. Think of all the wedding photography that has existed since then with, you know, that Vitamin String Quartet music and a drone shot. He could have made a killing. So yeah, those were my kind of pondering points as my number five.
Yeah, I mean, I was interested in all of this too. There's this 40-foot deep, 200-meter wide man-made trench spanning hundreds of miles. And he says primitive man ran from its numbers, meaning the Zeds, abandoning it to this remote and barren wilderness known as the Dead Sector. So, yeah, like that sounds weird. Like ran from its numbers, abandoning it to this sector. I mean, you'd think that they would have pushed all the Zeds in there. Right? It's not really clear whether there's dead outside of this area, but it seems like that was the point, right? It's called the Dead Sector. And so it seems like the point is there aren't any dead outside of it and that they've tried to just get them all in one place where they can't escape. But then, like, really, could you do that? How could you do that? So maybe it's just all the dead in this state that this place is at, but then more would come to the state. So yeah, I don't really know. I mean, the question's at who made this trench, how would it seems like a long time would take. So it's in the future. Are all the Zeds supposed to be there? Why would the Skull Hunters be there? They did give some clues, you know. Everett says humans don't belong here. That's the point of the trench, but maybe this is the only place to get the Zed skulls. And they said something about, like I said, they use them as trophies, but also like to scare others. And then Amy gives more color on this. You know, she says she's with a group trying to resettle the Dead Sector. Everett says, you don't want to live here. It's not safe. She says, well, it's dangerous everywhere. And she says, you ever cross over? You ever seen how bad it is on the other side? Yeah, it's crazy that we just abandoned so much to them, meaning we gave all this land to the zombies. But she's saying it's even worse outside. So if there are, I was just imagining, okay, maybe all the Zeds, at least in this area, are confined to this one space because of this trench, but outside it's just like Mad Max. And, you know, I don't blame Dr. Everett for taking this pessimistic view of humanity, given all the horrible people and groups we've seen in The Walking Dead, and maybe even without the zombies, they're just ruling and being assholes to everybody, you know?
Yeah, the Dead Sector is really, really fascinating because it's actually a pretty good idea. Like, if you were to say, like, I don't know, lead all the Zeds to the Grand Canyon or something, you know what I mean? There is, yeah. It's actually right. Not without merit.
Right.
But I'm really woolly on what is happening with it. And yeah, the idea, I think, that it's no better being outside of the Dead Sector than it is being in it is super intriguing, because like what's happening, like what's so bad out there? Has it gone like you say Mad Max, or is it just less, I don't know, there's no toilet paper? Like, I mean, we've lived through that, guys, it's not that bad. Or, you know, what is going on? So yeah.
And I mean, if Amy is lying and really they're just getting the heads because it helps scare other people that they're fighting on the other side of the trench, then that's something too, that maybe it's just all at war over there or something, you know? I mean, the whole thing about the vagueness of what this means, and it's since it's location related, and then later when Everett tells Amy, well, I know that your group is about to be attacked by a herd, and or they're in the herd's path, and if you go back there, you're going to die. It started to give me Fear the Walking Dead vibes with all this stuff about locations, you know, they do, where it feels like you could get around it, but or I don't know. Maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree with that, but.
It's a difficult one because part of me is like, yeah, I suppose he does know a lot about their yeah. locations and things like that. But on the other hand, I'm like, oh, it's convenient.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, it's exactly. so predictable.
Well, I'll do my first point, which I'll make a short one since I kind of just commented on yours. But I just thought it was really cool that we started off with this like nature documentary style footage and David Attenborough style narration. And it's... I love when it reminds me of Lost when suddenly like we're looking at a submarine or something. It's like, what? Mm-hmm. You know, it's jarring to see, but it was beautiful. And we see all these different types of animals and migrating zeds. And we get this narration. What we are witnessing is nature's great reclamation effort in our current geographical epoch within this territory demarcated by a 40-foot deep, 200-meter wide man-made trench spanning hundreds of miles. The revitalization of biodiversity rivals the most diverse ecosystems of the Holocene. And I just thought it was really fun. And throughout the episode, since nature is a theme, they occasionally will just like show a bird pecking at a tree or something, which I liked. Mm-hmm. And I also thought it was fun to hear some of the Zed behaviors that we've seen and known filtered through this scientific / nature show narration. Like when he says they're highly manipulated by the presence of sound signaling potential prey. We've seen a lot with sound, or he's talking a lot about herds and migration, which we've seen talked about a lot on The Walking Dead. So I just thought that was all really fun, and probably my favorite part of this whole idea for this episode was that they did that nature footage, even though drones weren't around, and it's probably BS.
I enjoyed that too, and I think it they actually did it really well last mm-hmm. week as well, I thought, with the kind of jarring, hang on, this is a norm, how is this alpha, who's this woman, like this is a very different tone, this is like sexy boat thriller lady, rich lady, and then you're like, oh, it is the apocalypse. Like I'm yeah, kind of right, enjoying yeah. how it's screwing with our expectations a little.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. They've been doing that pretty mm-hmm. much every episode. Maybe not so much the very first episode, but definitely 2, 3, and 4.
Mm-hmm. 2, 3, and 4 definitely went there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next.
For me, next, I would like to talk about the performances. I thought that both actors were just fantastic, and Poppy Liu is really dynamite to watch. I've not actually seen Poppy Liu in anything else. I don't think, but either. I know she's been in Hacks, which I've heard people talk really really fondly about, and obviously seeing Anthony Edwards again was crazy. I couldn't believe that was Dr. Green from ER. Mm-hmm. I did giggle a little bit because he looked a little bit like the guy that plays Tobias Fünke in Arrested Development. So there was part of me that was like, this episode would be amazing if it was Tobias doing this.
David Cross. Yeah.
David Cross, that's the one. I was like, if he just came out dressed all in like painted blue, like I blew myself.
Cutoffs.
Yeah. A never nude underneath his skin jacket. I thought their dynamic was cute. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed how interested Amy was in everything. And looking at it again, with this idea that this is much further on in the apocalypse than I'd appreciated, I'm guessing Amy's like a Judith. She's been brought up entirely in the apocalypse. So it was interesting to see things I hadn't really thought of before, like she's been teaching herself. She's got high school books out of the library to learn mm-hmm. about things, what she's interested in. She likes poetry. She likes biology. She thinks birds are cool. She's very interested in animals. But she's also, I don't know, that she's quite, I loved the kind of entertaining energy that Poppy Liu brought to the character. Like I really laughed at I feel like my butt got sucked up through my esophagus, and he's like, that's scientifically impossible, and she's like, no, that's why I said it was like my butt. My butt got sucked up through my esophagus. I enjoyed that a lot, and I thought Anthony Edwards did a really good turn as Dr. Everett. He managed the kind of detachment from his subjects very well. I've written Dr. Everett is cold as hell, eating a snack while watching Amy yeah. fight with Specimen 21. But I think he also played some of the more unhinged bits of Dr. Everett well. He didn't go too far into, like, I don't know, hysteria or being over the top, but yeah, he really got across that kind of pain, particularly when 21 went kind of sailing into the lake. And yeah, he sold some of those more David Attenborough lines, like Homo Mortis and things like that. And his belief in it was really saved that from kind of being a one note or an unengaging thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if he'd played it unhinged, then it would have been campy. But when people do, because he's a whack job, basically.
100%.
But when people do stuff like that, it's not because they're like, I hate all people. It's because their belief system is different than mine. You know, and I think of that as insane. But that's all sanity is what we all believe is the right thing. Mm-hmm. And so he just sees nature as... like a human dying as part of nature, like we, you know, some of us would if we were watching a nature documentary and one of the animals killed the other one, which they show all the time. And I realize most of you listening probably would react poorly to that too, but I'm just saying, like, to him that's just like swatting a fly or something, you know.
And there will be some people living amongst us now who see it that way. Like, that is the thing, is I think his views are, they are peeled into focus because of peeled into focus because of the situation in which he finds himself. But I bet if you dug into it, there are a few people out there who kind of agree in that sort of thing. Like, there's that crazy there's like a wild philosopher guy who, you know, believes in things like very much in sort of almost Darwinism, but he justifies it through kind of very academic philosophical reasoning. Like, you can get to a lot of places through analysis and reasoning, but they're not places that we all necessarily want to go or agree with.
Come on, admit it. You agree. You hate people.
I hate all totally people. I'm really bummed out. I hate people, places, and things. I was talking to someone the other day and I was like, I was going to go and do this thing, but then I remembered, I hate people, places, and things. Like, I just hate them. I just don't want to do it.
That's funny. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I could see people getting to this place, and there are, I mean, it's sort of that impulse that most of us have, where when we see an animal die in a show, it hurts more than when you see a person die, taken to the extreme, where you would actually feel that in real life, you know, where it's, or, and then instead of animals, it's zombies.
Yeah, that you care exactly about more.
So you could sort of understand his impulse if you think about it in those terms. But I, as far as Amy, I felt about her, I think, the way that Dr. Everett did throughout the episode, which is, I thought she was super annoying at first. And, well, actually, when we first met her and she was in trouble and he was casually eating a snack, that was chilling. That was chilling. And I thought, oh, help that girl. But then
you've got to eat. You've got to eat. Sometimes you're just hungry. You can be stressed, but you can be hungry.
But then when she, you know, he saved her and she's like following him and just talking a lot, saying she's hungry, sick, wanting painkillers. And then she goes, hey, did you hear what I just said? That was chilling to me. I thought, oh man, she suddenly seems really sketchy. And then she goes, I'm not a thief. I'm not going to rob you. And as soon as someone says, I'm not a thief, you gotta wonder, like, are they telling the truth? And so suddenly they're both seeming really creepy to me. And then she's outside his door saying, you know, I'm going to turn into a zombie and eat you. I apologize in advance. And I'm like, I would not turn my back on this person.
I thought she was eating berries deliberately to like make people, to make herself sick, but then I've written in my notes, no, she's just dumb.
Maybe. Who knows? I still don't know for sure. I think that was not on purpose, but now that you mention it, we don't know. Then when he lets her in finally and gives her that drink with charcoal water and ginger, I'm like, oh, it's so good to see him being a doctor again. But but then you know, when he came around on her, so did I. Like, she made those X's to track specimen 21 and he was impressed with that. And then mm-hmm. she got curious about his research, and he showed her a video of animals that escaped the zoos, which was beautiful, showing alligators, flamingos, giraffes, fields of colorful flowers. And she was all interested in it. And then she says she likes poetry. And anyway, that whole and then she sees that bird, that rare bird, the Victoria Crown Pigeon, and was fascinated with it. And he came around on her, and so did I. I'm like, oh, she's all right. Mm-hmm. Second watch, I thought from the beginning she wasn't nearly as annoying, given how it ended with him being a total crazy nut.
Mm-hmm. I think they're both brittle people. I think they've got rough edges. Like, there's stuff about them that is not easy to warm to in mm-hmm. either case, for very different reasons. But I think one of the things I liked about Amy was that when you saw her get excited about things like seeing a bird, that's a very pure kind of excitement that always endears me to yeah. people. Like, so, one of the things I like most about my job at the moment is that I get to meet people who are into some really obscure stuff. But I, even if I don't care about the stuff, I love how excited they are and how much they like it. And yeah. that's something that I think really humanizes people and makes them likable. And she spoke to the bird in the same kind of voice that I speak to animals I have yet to meet. So that I felt I should really, really stick up for her because of that. But, you know, then at the end, was she a headhunter? Does it matter? Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was this one thing that I'm maybe a little concerned could be a pattern, although maybe it's okay with this show, Tales of the Walking Dead, is putting together people who are different and yeah. they have to work together. You know, Joe and Evie, and then we had, what were the two, Parker Posey and Jillian
Bell?
Gina and Blair. And then with, the Alpha episode, that's pretty much just like Alpha and everybody. That's not
quite Alpha and humanity.
But here it's back to the same thing again. But yeah, they're almost caricatures, really. Like, he's the hermit who hates humanity, and she says, my community is the most important thing to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of leads nicely into my next point, because my point, oh no, hang on, it's your turn, because I'm talking about performances.
Yeah,
so I'm
going to
step back.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll allow it.
Okay. Thank you, Judge. I was happy. Mine is Dr. Everett on the surface, what he projects and thinks he is. And first off, I love Anthony Edwards. I haven't seen him in that many things, but I have a soft spot for him. He played Gilbert in Revenge of the Nerds, Goose in Top Gun, and Mark Green on ER. Although, I saw someone post that they went back to watch ER and were surprised at what a jerk Mark was on there, which made me feel sad, because that's not how I remember it. So I'm not going to go back and watch it again.
ER went for so long. I had a quick look and it's like 15 seasons, man.
But he was 15. Only on for like the first maybe 5 years or something like that.
Yeah, he left, I think, right about season 8. Huh?
Is that what
something
it was?
Like that. Okay, yeah.
Okay. But I liked him on there a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was curious because he'd played these sort of side characters before, but he made a great leading man, I thought. Mm-hmm. So he studies the Zeds. He spent years studying the migration and psychology of Zeds. And it made me think of World Beyond. He uses these transmitters. I was thinking he might like the Civic Republic research facility from World Beyond, where Leo worked, except he hates people, so maybe not.
He'd be an asset to them, though. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he says sentiment is a hindrance and science is how we survive or don't. Science is the basis of everything on this planet. So he wants to present himself as this person who just believes in the natural order of things, even if that means that humanity doesn't come out the winner, I think. Mm-hmm. He says he was part of this research group studying the environment, and unfortunately disagreements fractured our group, which I imagine some of the group cared about humanity.
It was just something silly, like some of them cared about human life, and I was like, ew, no, bye. No,
come on.
Come on.
He wears this Homo Mortis skin jacket to walk amongst the Zeds, which I thought was a pretty cool idea. Very gruesome. I mean, it's a human skin jacket, but
Peter obviously clocked that immediately. He was like, oh, yeah, fashion shout, that is made from skin. I'm like, great.
And I think he thinks he's in paradise where nature has triumphed over pesky humans who mess up everything. It's perfect for him. He doesn't want people coming in messing it up. And then I thought, well, if he doesn't like people, then what's the point of studying the Zeds? And I think scientists often study things without knowing what the use or application could be, to the point where you'll ask them, what are you going to use this for? And they're like, what? I don't, who cares? Like, I'm just figuring it out. And then it becomes apparent later. I think typically there's the immediate goal of having a greater understanding of the way whatever this is works. But then there's, I think there is the hope that eventually someone else will have some application that benefits humanity. And that's where there's more going on with him. Like, he's not thinking along those lines, I don't think. And that's a whole another thing about what's going on under the surface, but I have that as another point.
I completely, yeah, I think all those are really, really valid points. I am, one of my points actually was, how did I phrase it? Man or mortis? It kind of ties into what you were saying about the surface beliefs and the way that Everett really portrays himself. And yeah, I think you're right. Having two such diametrically opposed, almost caricatures, kind of really flattens some of the nuance, I think, in the kind of overall argument of the episode, or the overall kind of theme of the episode, which I think is really about, you know, humanity versus the dead. Like, whose world is it now? Like, to what extent do they have to give it over? To what extent should they? And that's something that I think is hard, because as humans, like, our instinct is to survive and to fight and to push on. But this came up a lot in World Beyond as well. In fact, Elton's mother's thesis, which is a plot point, if you've not watched World Beyond, go watch it, is about this, is it not? It's about going with the wind and where That's the wind right. will carry you, and letting nature take its course. And it is, I think there is truth to some of his arguments about intervention in nature, but I think the point of zombies is they are unnatural. It is not natural for a deceased body to begin to live again and reanimate. So that's where it kind of falls down.
Mm-hmm. Everett wouldn't agree with that, though.
No, he would agree that this is the next stage of, like, evolution, right? This is the next apex predator.
Something natural. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Whereas to us, we're like, well, no, it's clearly the most unnatural thing, because it's it goes in the face of and human existence.
Even if it was natural, as a human being, to say, okay, there's something stronger out there than us, so we should just lay down and die, that's just the question of whether we should encourage suicide. You know, I think there's a good point that we are, I hope this doesn't get too, like, up on a soapbox, but we're not doing this planet any favors for the most part, you know. And so we could do better, and we are, and a lot of people are trying to figure out how to do better. I mean, mostly because we're motivated for our own survival, but still there's a lot of just environmentalists who want to, you know, like in the United States we have all these national parks that are protected, and I'm so grateful for that, that nature's beauty is prized, you know. But at the same time, there's a balance there, and I think to say, no, let's just lay down and die, is, I don't support that. I'll just say that. You know, like, you gotta have a balance.
Yeah, there does, there absolutely has to be a balance, and I think that's very true. I think they're really, I can't really argue with that, to be honest.
I mean, I guess that's a position someone could take the other position, and maybe it would be an interesting debate. But to say, no, there's someone that's higher on the food chain than humanity, so we should just accept that and not fight it, I take the position that, no, I don't agree with that.
The role of, like, the documentarian always really interests me as well, because the whole point of the documentarian is to be impartial and to not involve yourself in it at all. And there was a not a scandal, but like a news story two or three years ago in the UK about like on a David Attenborough documentary, some camera crew intervened to save a baby penguin. It was like they went against the sacred rule of documentary makers, but also the penguin was so cute and it was going to fall and die. And I kind of loved that, like, in the face of all these like ethical rules, sometimes you just look and say, I don't want this cute thing to die, I want to help, and you go and do it anyway. Right. But it was very tense watching. You think the Great British Bake Off is tense, try watching a baby penguin on a glacier getting saved by some documentary dudes, man. Whew.
And that's exactly the kind of sort of milieu or something that this episode was trying to put itself in, you know, that's the kind of position that camera documentarian that saved the baby penguin is, the same kind of position that Dr. Everett is in when he's saving his zombie subjects.
Yes, the very cute number 21. He's so cute. Right. I did love how wretched these zombies are, like the really, really old ones. That was awesome. Like the level of decay on some of them, that was really well done. Good special effects. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, they haven't... I mean, there have been times where I've seen some of the zombies and be like, I feel like they're slacking a little bit. But for the most part, I think they've really kept it up really well.
The ones that they're focusing in on, I think they're paying off really well. I think 21, Dr. Mosley, I think I read that might have been a tribute to, was it Michael Mosley who passed away, one of the zombie extras
who played
one of Michonne's pets? Yeah. Yeah, I hope that's true, because that would
be... I bet you it is, yeah.
That'd be a really nice tribute, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure it must be.
So I think, yeah, in terms of Man versus Mortis, I think there it's really hard to know. But I think, yeah, my instinct is preserving humanity, but I think, you know...
It seems pretty obvious to me, but...
preserve humanity where possible. But also, you know, we're screwing up the planet quite a lot at the moment. Yeah. So I am a bit like, do we deserve to be saved? Yeah. There's definitely people on the show where I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't be sad if they got bit.
Sure.
Like,
sure. Yep. Okay. My next one is Dr. Everett in reality. And he seems... there's part of me that's just like, he's such a tool. And when I started, as I mentioned, thinking of him like Jane Goodall, it helped me a little bit. She's studied chimpanzees. She was the world's foremost expert on chimpanzees. She's best known for her 60-year study of social and family interactions of wild chimpanzees since she first went to Tanzania in 1960, where she witnessed human-like behaviors amongst chimpanzees, including armed conflict, apparently. People said she got too emotionally involved. Quote, Goodall used unconventional practices in her study, for example, naming individuals instead of numbering them. Mm-hmm. At the time, numbering was used to prevent emotional attachment and loss of objectivity. So that's why I think they were directly referencing her, because he calls one of his Zeds Sunflower.
Yeah.
And marvels at her acute auditory sense. So he's just so taken with them. Mm-hmm. I thought this quote was interesting. Goodall wrote in 1993, when in the early 60s, I brazenly used such words as childhood, adolescence, motivation, excitement, and mood, I was much criticized. Even worse was my crime of suggesting that chimpanzees had personalities. I was ascribing human characteristics to non-human animals and was thus guilty of that worst of ethological sins, anthropomorphism. But I think she probably goes on to say it's borne out that they do have these characteristics, you know? Mm-hmm. Either way, I think Everett speaks so glowingly about the zombies that I think he's just in love with them as a creature.
He definitely sees the kind of majesty of them. He's got that kind of blinker of, or what is it he accuses Amy of having? I think you see everything through your, does he say filter or bias? Yeah. He definitely, but she calls him out on that. She's like, that is hypocritical. You're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And he has this pro-zombie bias. He says specimen 21 was consuming a wild dog and left some behind for the rest of the herd, which he thought was a deliberate, selfless action. And I'm like, well, zombies often bite people but don't eat them, which is why we have more zombies and not just a bunch of piles of bones. So
I had a little query about that, actually, because Yeah, I noticed at the end when he stumbles upon the camp, mostly they've all been bit rather than eaten. And I was like, mm-hmm. that's interesting. I wonder what the logic behind who gets bit and who gets eaten are. Like, are some people tastier than others?
You know, I've always, work? I mean, I think behind the scenes, the reason for that is if the zombies just ate everyone, then there would be no more zombies. So they had to make them just bite. But if you think about it from an evolutionary perspective, maybe the zombies are programmed to do that because they want more zombies, you know, or their genes, mm-hmm. their DNA wants more zombies or whatever. But maybe Everett's right. Who knows? You know, maybe they want to leave food for others in the herd.
Right. It was one of those things I was like, I've never thought about this, but yeah, some people must be tastier than others, or like, I mean, you couldn't eat everyone because then it would be like, you know, have you ever tried to like go for a walk after like a massive Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner? Like, ew, no. So I guess maybe it just makes sense.
Yeah. You're not always hungry.
No.
And then he says the zombies are helping the rest of the ecosystem. Uniquely driving this resurgence is one of the world's apex predators. Speciation of the Homo sapiens has reduced the human being to prey and elevated Homo mortis, a term I've coined for the dead, to the top of the food chain. Also, he says sentiment is a hindrance, but I think he's all sentiment, really.
Mm-hmm.
Amy says she read this poem about how we wear masks and his Homo mortis jacket reminds her of that. And I'm like, yeah, he's so enthralled with the Zeds. I think, yes, this helps him walk among them, but it also helps him feel more like one, you know, wearing their skin. And he cares so much about his old partner subject, or what is it called? Specimen 21, who he cares about more than humans. And when he says, well, he's very complimentary about Specimen 21, but when he, like that moment where he's always saying he doesn't interfere, but then when they find her friend being attacked and he holds her and says, holds Amy so she can't go help her friend, and says, mm-hmm. let nature take its course. She's a part of the food chain now. I'm like, okay, I can understand where you have this idea that this is the natural order, but if you're holding someone else back from interfering, then you're a freaking psychopath. That's uh-huh. where I just thought, okay, this is too much. Now he's a campy character. And then
controlling her behavior crosses a line.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. He's interfering in that way. He's not letting another human do what they would naturally do.
Mm-hmm.
And then 21, Specimen 21 is out on this raft and he's begging Amy to help. And then the alligator attacks the guy and I just laughed.
I was just going to say, like, can we just talk for a minute about how that scene was actually quite funny? Because he's like, oh, I'm on the raft now. And it's like, bloop, boo, doo, boo, doo. And I'm like, oh my God. Okay, I'll try and take this seriously. I'll try and take this seriously. And then the gator pops up and I'm like, okay, no, this is just funny.
Yeah, like, and I imagine the writers probably knew that's how we would react to that. But at that point, I'm just so against him and he's like, help me with this. And I'm like, fuck you, man. And then that happened. It was like, ha ha.
It was a real like, mwah, mwah moment.
But it was also interesting because on second watch, I noticed that when he was showing Amy the video and talking about how the animals that escaped the zoos are surviving thriving because the zombies basically have driven all humans out. And so they've even increased in size and everything. They showed an alligator in that montage of animals.
Mm-hmm.
And now maybe one of these alligators that the zombies helped escape the zoo and thrive killed his prize zombie. And this is the direct occurrence of this type of natural event that he's been waxing poetic about, but he's in despair because it's a zombie that he cares about that's being eaten. So he's full of shit. He's not impartial. He's not unsentimental. You know, mm-hmm. this is how much more natural does it get than an alligator eating something, but he's against it.
And he's really like, why, my friend? Why? And it's like, yeah, he got eaten though.
Oh, wow.
Don't kill him. It's like, oh, dear.
Yeah.
It's so accurate, though.
All right, that's all I had about him. Got any more?
What have I got? I have the poems. I thought point two could be the poems that are mentioned. So the first poem that is really featured is by Emily Dickinson, Nature is What We See, and that's what he's reading over in the final voiceover of Nature is What We See, The Hill, The Afternoon, etc., etc. And it talks about the final lines are, Nature is what we know, yet have no art to say, so impotent our wisdom is to her simplicity. So it's about humanity being inadequate in light of nature, so how we can never quite be as powerful as she is. And the poem that Amy talks about, Vulture located the poem as being We Wear the Mask by Paul Laurence Dunbar. And I looked up the poem and it's quite an interesting one. So I will read the poem, We Wear the Mask. So, we wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts we smile and mouth with myriad subtleties. Why should the world be overwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them only see us while we wear the mask. We smile, but O great Christ, our cries to thee from tortured souls arise. We sing, but O the clay is vile beneath our feet and long the mile. But let the world dream otherwise, we wear the mask. So it's kind of like The Whisperers. But it's about, you know, what we project not being necessarily what we feel. And I think that ties in really nicely with what you were saying about Dr. Everett.
Right.
And I had written down two quotes that kind of summarize this kind of Dr. Everett and the mask wearing and the man versus nature versus zombies. At one point, they talk about living in your personal Eden. So this idea of being... I don't know, the last man and the last woman, like the first man and the first woman in this forest, in this kind of garden. And in the kind of interactions between Amy and Dr. Everett, he talks about, I've lost my faith in humans. And she says, and I think she's not wrong, you shitting on people is just an excuse not to do things, and it's possible to respect the science and care for people at the same time. Mm-hmm. But I think where the episode leads us to believe is that she's very wrong here, that you can't do both because of kind of the very pessimistic ending of it.
He told her a herd was coming and her people would die, and if she went back to warn them, she would too, and that's exactly what happened.
Yes, it was. I kind of knew that's where it was going to go, but I was like, no.
And then even more chilling that in the end, he tags her and she becomes one of his subjects.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the ending of a Twilight Zone right there.
It really is. It's like, was she a subject the whole time? Did he know that this is going to happen? Does he only tag those that he has had experience of in real life? Because then he can
compare them. Is she the new Specimen 21?
Oh, she made an excellent zombie, though.
Yeah, she did, yeah.
I have to say, part of me, and I think this would have been jumping the shark and would have been totally hammy, but part of me, when we first saw that herd and he was describing zombies, I was like, wouldn't it be so funny if, like, a past character was one of these zombies, like Merle or something? You could recognize them, and you were like, oh, look, it's Andrea or something, but... Sadly not. That didn't happen, and I think it probably would have been cheesy as hell, but it made me laugh to think that it might happen.
And since it's a nature documentary, I am kind of disappointed we didn't see a lion mauling some zombies or something like that.
I know, they promised us bears, and no bears happened, and I love bears. So sad, but yeah, whatever. We got some bear footage, so it's fine,
yeah,
I
we
guess.
Did. All stock footage, I'm sure, but that's fine.
Stock bears.
All right, I think I've exhausted my points. I have some notes. I think you have one more left, though, right?
It wasn't actually a huge point. It was just about birds. I liked the use of kind of nature footage, and the birds that we saw in the episode were kind of, I don't know, maybe a little symbolic, because we saw the... Oh, you had the name of the bird that I've written bad purple CGI bird that was quite cute. It's a kind of pigeon, you said?
I forgot what it was.
Yeah.
It was rare. It was blue. It was pretty.
It was a pretty pigeon. And it was about, you know, hope and seeing these beautiful things. And that was nice. But then you also have the vultures at the end circling because they can tell death.
Victoria Crown Pigeon.
Victoria Crown Pigeon. Mm. And vultures. And then, of course, mm-hmm. the migration of the walkers is like birds. She's passionate about birds in her own kind of research. She likes talking about them. She likes interesting facts about them. But they are part of nature. And as we see, that comes back to kind of indicate death is coming with the vultures. And also the migration pattern is what kills her and her friends in the end. So, yeah, I thought the bird symbolism was neat.
I mean, too, like, I always encourage people who have these, well, anyone, but especially people who have this tendency to be like, no, people are not worthwhile. I prefer to stay at home. I don't like meeting people, to just realize, hey, if you just gave people a chance, a lot of people, you'd find something interesting about them and you'd connect. Mm-hmm. And so for him, he's like, I don't want anyone to come to my island here. I hate them all. And then she's like, well, I read poetry and I like birds. And then he's like, oh, you want to stay here and work with me forever and then take over my work when I'm done?
You can borrow my books. You can borrow my books. She's like, oh,
didn't take much.
No, I'm good. I'm going to go find my friends. Fine. They're dying anyway. Like, oh, wait.
Totally. This guy.
And this guy.
She was
the worst.
A little too insistent too. Like, you should come join our group. I'm like, I don't know if I would try to convince this guy. He may be dangerous, you know. I thought like that was a little unrealistic that she was so like arguing with him to come back and join her group.
I also didn't love that he kept watching her with the drone after she left him. I found that very creepy.
Yeah, he's a creepy
guy. I was
guy.
Like, all right, just follow her then, I guess. That's really weird.
But I should have mentioned, I thought it was really cool that you read that poem and how it tied in and everything. So thanks for getting that.
Thanks. My pleasure. Love a little poetry recital.
Yeah. All right. Notes.
Notes, groans, grumbles. I think I've written everybody got bit and nobody got ate, ? But we spoke about that. Loved that her friend Heather didn't get any lines.
Hannah
didn't get any lines and ran
just
away.
Screamed and ran off. I was a little confused about that at first, but yeah,
I was
she
like,
was crying about another friend that got eaten, and Hannah took off shrieking.
Yeah, his solar panels are super powerful because he has quite a lot of electricity. It would seem he can leave lights on overnight. I enjoyed when she made her way into his home by sticking her knife in the wall and standing on it. His house was actually kind of like a bird keep, or like, you know, what's the word for the hut that you're in to watch birds, to go bird watching?
I don't
bird watch regularly,
birding
but
hut.
We'll
say that.
A birding hut. It reminded me of that. And the idea of being kind of raised above the ground was admittedly quite clever.
Yep.
And my final note is Chompers, lol.
Yeah, we got two new Zed names, Chompers and Homo Mortis.
Homo Mortis, I thought, was
pretty good.
Admirable, yeah. But Chompers, nah.
But it's good to kind of show the difference in their personalities,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
All right. I have a few notes. The opening sequences of Tales of the Walking Dead, I love it. Each image is gorgeous. I like how you see the six images of the episodes and then it resolves into the one for this week. And this week's with the snake in the skull was especially cool and creepy.
Loved that. Loved it.
And I like the sting effect of the show where they show something kind of shocking and then boom, go into the opening sequence. This week mm-hmm. I think it was him eating his snack while she's being attacked. Let's see. Oh, Amy said the zombies will eventually rot out. And Everett said, that's an astute observation. Homo mortis will exist as long as humans are around. So I guess he's agreeing that they will rot out, which I don't know if we know that or knew that for sure. We've never seen a zombie just sort of expire on its own.
Is this a plot point in 28 Days Later that they'll eventually... waiting for them to tire out. It's interesting because I think his hypothesis is kind of right, that they'll exist as long as we exist because we're all infected, which I assume he's figured out by now. But she's right to be querying, well, is there not a chance then that they could just die out?
Sure, but I'm just saying, like, you know, new zombies can't be formed if there's no humans around. But as far as we know, because zombies are not real, so they don't, you know, follow any real laws as far as we know, that they could just go on shambling around forever. And so now if Dr. Everett is right, maybe that's not true. Maybe they will die out. They will just fall down or something, you know.
I
don't think we've ever seen that on the show. We've seen Zed's bodies just laying there covered in moss or something, but that could have been because someone shot them in the head or something. Or it's a lot of times they're going, rah, rah, they're still just thrashing around. Everett, being a Zed sympathizer, reminded me of Lizzie a little bit.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And... Do you have something else about that?
No. I'm just enjoying that idea that Lizzie could have ended up being a like wacko scientist in the future.
She could have been
like,
a good partner.
Why not?
Dr. Mosley being specimen 21 reminded me of Dr. Jenner's wife being TS-19 in the first season.
Yes.
The whole science thing reminded me of World Beyond and Dr. Bennett, who also studied Walker migration patterns, and Milton, who studied their psychology back in season 3 of The Walking Dead. So the fact that a lot of things in this reminded me of other things in The Walking Dead did sort of make me feel like I'm right, that this whole thing is kind of played out. But, I'm enjoying this show though, for sure.
I think it's good because you don't have to dwell on it. Like, if it's not, I mean, we podcast about it, so we dwell on it every week. But if you got to one episode and you were like, no, this is absolutely shit, don't worry. You don't have to watch it again next week. It's not like something that rhymes with Schmear the Schmocking Schmed. It's like, you know, it will change. So there might be something that you like.
Exactly. And also, podcasting about it, like most shows, except for Schmear the Schmocking Schmed, actually makes me like it more.
Well, sure. Indeed.
And next episode, week's episode, it looks super creepy, like maybe the horror movie episode I was hoping for. It stars the guy who plays A-Train in The Boys, if you watch that show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's also got the lowest like audience rating in IMDb of the episode, so I don't know. We'll see how it is.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. I think that was good. Let's take a little break. There's more to come. We'll get your feedback, some news. Stay with us.
Woohoo!
Obvious threat to untold numbers of citizens.
The people it kills get up and kill.
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
This is a Walking Dead cast news update.
Okay, just a couple of quick things. Actually, just one thing. It's about last week's episode. I was looking around to see if showrunner Channing Powell had done any interviews about it, because I was hoping she might have cleared up some of the confusion about Alpha's timeline, but I couldn't find anything. I found a couple things with Samantha Morton, who plays Alpha/D. One from decider.com. They asked, I wanted to ask about the Hera scene, because there's been a lot of questions in folks' minds about how that all fits into the continuity. Do you have any sense of whether she is Alpha's mentor, what that relationship is, and whether we might see more of it? She says, you know what? I really don't. I think that's a question for Channing or Scott Gimple. I'm just as intrigued and confused by it as maybe you might be. I certainly had assumed that there was a different storyline for Alpha because of Alpha and Beta, but they've definitely got it covered. They're not idiots. They really know what they're doing. Channing, who wrote this episode, also wrote a huge amount of Alpha's backstory in The Walking Dead. So I wish I had mentioned that when we talked about that episode, by the way. The same writer wrote Alpha before. She continues, there's something there, and there's a part of me that didn't want to ask too many questions because I have this hope that maybe they'll explore the character more, but that isn't on the cards as far as I'm aware. I like to be surprised, and I like to learn things as I go along and go, oh, okay. Yeah, so I'm a fan as well. I'm like, what's happening and why? And what does this mean?
Okay, so clear as mud.
Right, exactly. And then comicbook.com also talked to her. They said, this episode ends with the reveal of Hera and this other Whisperer's origin story. Have there been talks about fleshing out this mythology and telling more of Alpha's story in Tales Season 2 or a Whisper spinoff? She says, no, not really. I haven't heard anything. So it was really nice at Comic-Con because I hadn't done Comic-Con before and I arrived and people were quite chuffed to see me / Alpha. And that was really good. And there were quite a few questions like that. We'd like this. We'd like to see that. And I think AMC are very busy making lots of spinoffs at the moment in regards to The Walking Dead. So I'm not sure. I haven't heard anything, which is kind of a bummer. I mean, maybe they wouldn't tell her if they were planning it, you know, but I don't know. I thought for sure they would be planning a sequel to that episode, though.
Oh, yeah. I love quite chuffed. They were quite chuffed to see me.
I learned that word because we were covering Great British Bake Off.
Amazing.
And we would look up all the Britishisms that we didn't know what they were talking about. And to me, chuff sounds negative, but it's not.
But weirdly, you can say something's a load of chuff. You can be like, oh, it's just a load of chuff. But to be chuffed is like quite nice. It's quite good. Cute. It's like, I'm very chuffed. Like, yeah, it's a strange language, really.
All right. Let's move on to listener moans, groans, and grunts.
First up, Jody Langridge says, this was my least favorite so far. It started out interesting, but there were a few things that happened that made me actually lol because they were not believable enough. You know, like walkers are. A number of times, both the characters tripped, which seemed way too staged, along with the alligator chomp facepalm emoji. Not a lot happened, really. Holding out hope for the last two eps. Fair enough, Jody. It was a very funny alligator chomp.
It was. Jonathan Buchalis says, I was really excited about the opening. I thought it would be highly amusing to have David Attenborough-style documentary on walkers, but then it devolved into another quirky character teaches a lesson episode, which is fine, but there wasn't really any payoff for me, and I feel we've seen this many times. Also fair.
Agree.
By the way... Jonathan is going to be doing, I think this is the first time I've talked about this, but there's this Andor Star Wars show coming up based on characters from the show, the movie Rogue One. And it looks really cool. The previews look great. And Jonathan and his pal James are going to be podcasting on that for Podcastica. So I'm really excited they're going to do that.
Oh, that's great. I really liked Rogue One.
Me too. I did.
Yeah. Ooh, okay. That's very exciting. That's something to look forward to. Will that be going out on a separate feed, Jason, or how can people subscribe to that?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. It's on House Podcastica, which is another podcast where it's kind of aggregate where a lot of other Podcastica shows are released, but also on the Star Wars TV cast, which is where we put Mandalorian, Boba Fett, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and now Andor. So you can find both of those at podcastica.com.
Excellent.
Thanks for asking.
Next up, we have Mark Nichols. My wife walked in while I was watching the beginning and said, I thought you were watching The Walking Dead. I am loving these bottle episodes. Yes, there are things we can pick apart, and the plot has to speed up to fit the episode. But watching the tone change each time is great. Anthony Edwards was great, and we finally got our answer to if the walkers can rot away and if they die without food, which was interesting. Another thing, next week's episode looked interesting and so different. different. Makes me curious about episode 6 and if there will be any ties to the main series to set it up for the final 8.
I feel like they probably won't, but I'm curious if they saved a really good one for last. And also, I'm very hopeful that the season gets renewed. I mean, the show, there's no guarantee that it will. I hope it does. I'm really enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Penny Lennox says, I think the CRM would be very interested to get their hands on Dr. Everett and his research. He's got tons of data they could use. Of course, he would hate them and everything they're trying to do. And for all we know, when you open up one of his notebooks, it just says, all work and no play makes Dr. Everett a dull boy 1,000 times.
Great research. 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10.
She goes on, Poppy Liu is quickly becoming a favorite actor of mine. I love her character on Hacks. She's very relatable here as Amy. Her point of view makes a lot of sense to a non-scientist. And she's right. Being alone all the time like that is not healthy. Dr. Everett is a little cracked.
Yep.
Cracked.com. Blanks Vargas says, I was excited to watch what I thought was a documentary. Laughing emoji, blushing emoji.
Brad Holt says, my favorite episode thus far. Dr. Everett was an interesting combination of Milton and Dr. Jenner. This episode felt the most like a real Walking Dead episode to me. I would love to see more of his character down the road.
Danielle Dement-Yost says, I really enjoyed the idea of this episode, but I wish we had seen more. It seems like this takes place way later in the timeline, but I'm not certain. I'm intrigued by the man-made trench. So people created a sanctuary of sort for walkers to keep them contained. What was that situation on the other side of the trench? I need more information. I was a happy little ER fan watching Anthony Edwards. It was very nice to see him. Agreed.
Yeah. Yep, agreed with all that. Okay, we have a few calls. Here is Sydney.
Hey, Jason. This is Sydney. I'm calling about the Anthony Edwards episode of Tales of. Okay, so I thought it was really boring, and I thought that Anthony Edwards made a shitty scientist. Everything he did was subjective. He was completely influenced by the relationships he had had with his subjects, and also his research wasn't to benefit the good of humanity, but it was also not to benefit the actual ecosystem in which the Walking Dead exists, because as it was established in the episode, these dead will not sustain and reproduce without, you know, a food source, and like they can't reproduce. So what was the benefit or like the point of his research? Then Amy. So my question is was Amy there in the dead zone to establish a relationship with the doctor so that she could move her group into that dead zone? Also, is this whole episode set in the future? Because that dead zone was new to me and I thought it was a really great idea. The moat seemed brilliant, but at the same time, did it even work? Because I think there were like a whole bunch of walkers outside of the dead zone too, correct? Okay, cool. Thank you guys. Bye.
I don't think we saw outside really, right? Except for some really high aerial views.
So we don't know. We don't know at all.
I thought the implication was that there weren't, since he was saying, you know, they've abandoned them to this area. And so anyway, I don't know.
Good points,
sure.
Though.
Good points. Good questions. I, you know, had those same questions about the point of his research, and it made me realize that I have encountered a lot of scientific research or heard about it where the scientific researchers don't know the application, but I think there is a hope that there will be some application. Even thinking of Jane Goodall, I mean, I didn't research, so maybe she had an idea, but I'm not sure, just thinking about it, what would be the benefit of studying chimpanzees. I mean, except for just gaining knowledge about the world, you know.
Cuteness.
All right. Thanks for calling, Sydney. Here is Steve Brown.
Steve.
Hello, Walking Dead cast. This is Steve, and this is for Tales of the Walking Dead, episode 4, Amy / Dr. Green. No, Dr. Everett. The Homo Mortis. Great narration. How is he filming this and narrating it? He's got a really long lens. Oh, was he using a drone? And now he's talking about there's a group that collects zombie heads? Ew. Well, at least he saved her, but I guess he doesn't kill walkers? That's pretty clever, using the knife and then crawling up there. And now, so is it just general information that they know that even if you die, even if you don't get bit, that you're going to turn? Because she just said, I'll die out here and then I'll turn. Well, he figured out what was wrong with her, gets the berries, and now he's trying to convince her to drink this charcoal water to help her get better. That's nice of him. Next time, bring a map. Is she telling the truth about her group, that they're just trying to find a place that'll sustain them?
We don't know.
So he's saying that the zombies are just part of nature. Okay. Oh, so his jacket is made out of skin, kind of like a whisperer without the mask. Oh, so Specimen 21 is a friend of his. Oh, that's a big gator. I think it's a gator. He just got his buddy. Oh, she just made a very clear statement. I would rather die than end up like you. Oh, no. Is he going to find Amy as a walker, chomper? Oh, there she is. All right. Talk to you next week.
So funny.
Oh, my God.
It's sad, but it's fun to just wait for, here it comes.
Uh-oh, here it comes.
Poor Steve.
Thanks, Steve. Excellent. Great episode for a live Steve.
Yep. And here's one from Claire. Claire, I haven't mentioned this in a while, but on Walking Deadcast, we tend to ask people to keep messages to around 90 seconds or 2 minutes. And I just feel like I should mention that to be fair to everyone who's doing that. But I'm going to play your full 3 minute message here. Here we go.
Hey guys, Claire here, leaving feedback for Tales of the Walking Dead. I really liked this episode. This might have been my favorite of the four. I just appreciated the depth that they went into the story. And I really liked the characters. I thought Dr. Everett and Amy were both really compelling and interesting and good characters. I thought the writing and dialogue, actually, I think the dialogue and writing has been really good in a lot of these episodes. And this was no exception. I liked the conversations, both like the really in-depth, serious conversations about the science and the world and ethics and things like that. And then just the more lighthearted conversations that these two characters had. I really liked how Amy kind of brought Dr. Everett around to see things somewhat. See things from her point of view, and especially convinced him of her own personal value. And it was unpredictable. I didn't see it ending the way it did. But I really liked the story of, you know, what I like stories of big impacts the world would see in a huge crisis, epidemic, whatever, pandemic, like a zombie apocalypse, what kind of things they would cause widespread, like with the animals. That was very cool. Some of it was kind of a little bit of a stretch. That ultra K high def camera work Dr. Everett was getting was one of those things I thought, like, wow, that's really good tech he's got there in his little hut in the woods, his little ranger station. But it was good. I liked the story. And one thing I thought, some of the, even though I really liked the dialogue, I think some of the acting and directing was a little, like, some of the way the lines were delivered were a little bit off here and there. But overall, that would just be nitpicking. Overall, I thought the story was really good. And I'm really hoping that we will see Dr. Everett again in the future, because I'm a big Anthony Edwards fan and he didn't disappoint me. So, and you guys are not disappointing me with your podcasting. It's been awesome. I have liked every episode probably a little bit more after listening to you guys debate it and bring out all the highlights. So keep up the good work and don't get bit.
Oh,
yay. What a lovely voice note.
Yeah, and if you ever want to spend an extra just like 20 seconds complimenting us, that's totally fine. Just add that on.
Yeah, 20 seconds, minutes, you know, whatever, yeah, whatever you feel like.
Any we're open is to fine. It. That was great, Claire. Thank you. It was a great point about the dialogue, which I hadn't even considered. And I just thought, well, I think sometimes you only notice dialogue when it's bad. But mm-hmm. when it's good, it just feels natural. And I think you're right.
Yeah, it just flows, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, that was lovely.
Alrighty, that is our show, episode 478. Thanks for listening, everybody. Glad you're back, Lucy. It's good to have you
good
back.
Good to be back. Mm. I'm loving it. Great.
Maybe
to be
we'll
here.
Have a couple of guests on for the last two, with so there'll be three of us. That could be fun.
Yeah, it'd be great. Absolutely.
If you want to write in and leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
While you're there, be sure to check out our other shows, because there are loads of them now. Absolutely, yeah, loads. I couldn't even list them all.
What's my favorite right now? I mean, one I'm looking forward to that I have recorded a podcast on, but it isn't out yet, is Handmaid's Tale. That's coming up. And we got screeners, so we got to see
excellent.
First, you know, episode, and so I'm really excited for that show to come back.
Is that season 5 now?
Yeah.
Wow.
And season 4 was I thought excellent.
Oh, that's good.
Next episode of this podcast is for Tales of the Walking Dead season 1 episode 5, Davon, D-A-V-O-N.
Davon.
Which is
Davon.
And then I want to mention, as always, this episode's made possible by Patreon supporters like Mike Krotowski, who've pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCabassi. Thank you to Mike
Krotowski.
Mike gets ad-free episodes of this. He doesn't have to listen to that. Sorry, advertisers.
Don't you all wish you were Mike? Don't you all just wish that you had his amazing life? Because I do.
And then I want to remind you guys about this contest. I said I would tell details at the end. So one person will win a Podcastica t-shirt with our logo emblazoned across the front, Kirk Manley Walking Dead poster, and a Here's Negan hardcover comic book with Negan's origin story. You can win by following Podcastica shows in Apple Podcasts. We're doing a subscription/follow drive for Apple specifically. So if you go in there, follow us, and download a couple of episodes of each. And I'll put the details, like step-by-step instructions of how to do that, in our show notes. Or you can go to facebook.com/podcastica. There's a post pinned to the top of the page about it. We will pick a winner at random Monday, September 12th. So just coming up next week. We're doing this whole subscription drive because we have all our podcasts coming out for these new shows, and they're coming up pretty low in the search results. Part of that's because we also have all of them in the House Podcastica feed, and most of our longtime listeners listen there. So that's why we want to ask you guys to go to the individual podcasts and follow us, so we can get them up and more people can find our stuff.
Am I right in thinking that although you can't enter the competition by doing it through anything other than Apple Podcasts, even if you don't use Apple Podcasts, it would be good to subscribe, or is it just Apple?
It would absolutely be good. And once we get through this week of this contest, because I don't want to try to tell people you shouldn't be using whatever you're using, you should use Apple. That's not what this is about. After this, I'm not going to like tell you to go use Apple. But the focus right now is for Apple, since they're the largest provider of podcasts. And that's how the most people Absolutely. Can find us. But yeah, if after you're done doing this Apple Podcast follow, if you would also just subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts or leave a review there, that would be awesome. And we thank you for all of that.
So what Jason's saying is, go out, buy an iPad, a MacBook, and an iPhone.
And an Apple Watch.
Once you've bought all that and your Apple Watch, then subscribe to the podcast, then you might win something.
Now, if you're not an Apple person at all and you want to help, you can download iTunes for Windows and do it on there.
Yes, indeed.
Alrighty, that's our show.
Thanks for listening. Don't get bit, Bridget Webb.
You're gonna be okay. It's gonna be safe. Okay?